Estonia's energy minister warns the EU's Russia oil price cap isn't tough enough. Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Will Bain. Thanks for starting your morning with us. Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world of oil and sanctions on Russian energy today. An embargo on oil arriving in the European Union by sea has come into force. And as we flagged on Friday, the G7 and allies' plan for a cap on the price of Russian oil being bought is also due to kick in this week. The price cap means only Russian oil bought for less than $60 a barrel will be allowed to be shipped using G7 and EU tankers, insurance companies and credit institutions. But already there's fears of loopholes and questions about whether that price cap is actually tough enough. Estonia's Riina Sikkut is one of those EU energy ministers who've worked on these attempts to squeeze Russian oil revenues. And I asked her if $60 a barrel was tough enough.
Estonian government position on oil price cap has always been as low as possible. It's even this $1 from moving, for example, from 61 to 60 dollars per barrel. It means per year $2 billion for Russia in revenues to finance war in Ukraine. So actually every dollar is important.
Clearly, so but President Zelensky, for example, yesterday saying he doesn't think this amounts to very much at all. In fact, he thinks it's a waste of time, were his exact words.
Of course, Estonia would also like to see a price cap on a level of 30 or something like this. That would actually be hurting Russia from day one. But it's a first step. And more importantly, there is a review mechanism. The price cap discussions, they don't end here.
But do you find that frustrating, though, Minister, that the pace is so slow in doing this, in putting the squeeze on? Because President Zelensky is clearly finding the pace frustrating. Countries like Estonia finding the pace of change frustrating.
Yes, but I think we even can't imagine. It's in Ukraine, they are talking about doing every today, tomorrow, negotiating for a week or two, or delaying it. It's just such a waste of life and resources for Ukraine. It's very difficult to imagine for other countries what the situation is like. We, in every decision we make, we are too slow for Ukraine, and we have to accept it and aim to achieve to be better.
Long term, this policy is going to come with quite a bit of pain, isn't it? I mean, we've seen already today the oil price, a lot of things going on with the oil price, of course, beyond this, but the oil price going up. So oil that you're buying from other places for Estonian businesses, for people at home, already getting more expensive. And that's not going to work itself out for some time, too. Do you think ordinary people in Estonia and across the European Union are ready for that economic pain of the next 6 months, a year?
I think in Estonia, it's somehow easier to explain or understand because we are bordering Russia. We see the threat. We understand it. I think there's natural solidarity with Ukraine. But of course, in every country, you have to have compensation in place or some kind of mechanism to at least soften the blow for low-income groups or people who really suffer. If we would have high energy prices, even without the war, that the state should compensate. It's a shock, something that domestic consumers could not foresee. They could not protect themselves or insure themselves against. So, and the war adds just an extra layer.
What happens next then, do you think?
I think this is just a small step. We need a 9th sanctions packet in EU. We need review of the oil price cap. We need to try out the revenues for Russia. And at the same time, provide all the weapons and ammunition that Ukraine asks for.
You're speaking to us from Brussels today, Minister. Do you think colleagues across Europe feel similarly to you, understand the urgency that you can clearly see in this situation?
Well, every time we meet, I try to remind my colleagues the urgency. But I think in the energy sector or among energy ministers, it's very well felt. We often have Ukrainian minister Herman Halushenko joining us via video and updating us on the situation in Ukraine, what kind of help they need to restore the heating and the electricity.
Riina Sikkut, Minister for Energy in Estonia, thank you so much for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
And as always with global oil prices, there's a lot of factors in the mix, because news from China this weekend that it might be ready to ramp up the reopening of its economy also looks set to drive up oil demand. Asian markets all rose this morning as the Chinese government announced further rollbacks to its strict zero COVID policies, as the BBC's Stephen McDonnell in Beijing explains.
The government seems to have given up on this idea that every outbreak must be returned to zero new infections. I mean, look at Beijing. The cases are still quite high here. And yet, from today, no PCR tests are required for public transport. In some cases, people are already being allowed to stay at home and isolate rather than going to these centralised quarantine facilities. Look at across the country. There are so many of these measures. And one of the crucial telling points has been the public messaging that the latest types of COVID-19 are not as serious. And it's a way of preparing the public for the opening up, which is coming.
The BBC's Stephen McDonnell in Beijing. Climate change is, of course, a huge global challenge, nowhere perhaps more so, though, than across Africa. A recent UN report found agricultural productivity growth has decreased there by 34% since 1961. The BBC's Michael Koloki has been on a road trip across Kenya, finding out how farmers there are trying to adapt.
I'm driving along a busy highway heading out of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The scenery is changing to farmland. My first stop is the county of Nakuru.
My name is Bernard Mwenja. I'm a farmer here. We now have lanes that you cannot predict. At times it comes that it's so heavy, carries away all the soil. When this soil is drained, it goes to the lake. And this is a breeding lake for flamingos. So when you take in there this soil with chemicals and fertilizers and whatever, you also kill the flamingos. Now, secondly, that lake, because of the climate change, dries. It remains like a dam. So the flamingos cannot be able to come here anymore.
Tourism is, of course, one of Kenya's key foreign exchange earners. Well, now I'm on my way to meet another farmer in the neighboring county of Nyandarua.
My name is Peggy Nyaga, and this is my strawberry farm. So sometimes you want to plant, and when you plant something, you actually can't get good harvest out of it because you plant and then we have drought.
So how have the farmers adapted to climate change?
We have done the drainage so that we don't take away the soil, and then all that water collected, we put it in the water pan. We have planted Napier grass. We have the trenches. We have also tried to plant trees, because we think most of this climate change has been caused by destruction.
I have a well that I was using strictly electricity, but because of the high cost of electricity bill, I have decided to do another three wells. I want to use solar. It will be cheaper.
The BBC's Michael Koloki reporting from Kenya there. And finally, construction of the world's largest telescope has officially begun, costing $2.2 billion. The square kilometre array will be split between sites in Australia and South Africa and will be the most sensitive telescope ever built. Great news for stargazers and scientists alike, I suspect. Amazing pictures of it on our website, bbcnews.com, if you want to go over and see those. Thanks very much for listening to the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.